Coming up on Golf Today, big winner is in the Big Easy. Masters champion Scottie Scheffler teeing it up for the first time since slipping on that green jacket. Now teaming up with another Texan at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. Plus another former Masters champion, Trevor Immelman, now the International President's Cup team captain, joining us to announce his assistance and assess his chances with a squad that's looking better. All about team play on this day, and with that, the Arnold Palmer Cup teams will be announced on this show with interviews with some of the stars of college golf named to these teams, women and men. That's all on the way. Yeah, thumbs up from the king on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
PGA Tour at TPC Louisiana this week for the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. PGA Tour's only official team competition of the season. Masters champ Scottie Scheffler returning to competition. He's with Ryan Palmer, former champ at this event. I need a dozen from Dragos right about now. There's some really good teams here. Hard not to love Morikawa and Victor Hovland. Smith and Leishman, the Aussies, are defending. Billy Horschel, Sam Burns, he's from Louisiana. Sam Burns, Homa and Gooch could be dangerous. Neiman and Pereira, or Will Zalatoris and Davis Riley. Well, news reported last night from my co-host Damon Lynch, PGA Tour winner Robert Garrigues requesting a release from the PGA Tour to play in the LIV Golf Invitational at Centurion Golf Club in London, June 9 through 11. A PGA Tour members must obtain a waiver in order to compete in events which are held on other circuits. These applications have to be submitted 45 days before the first round. Robert Garrigues, better than 350 starts, the lone win coming 12 years ago at Disney's, made about $15 million in his career. Hasn't done a whole lot lately. He is well outside the top 1,000 in the world. And with that, we welcome you, Rich Lerner, along with a man who broke this news, Eamon Lynch. Walk us through the nuts and bolts, Eamon. What does this Garrigues declaration mean, if anything at all?
Well, I think it's probably going to be the first of several, Rich. As you noted, any PGA Tour member who tries to play an event on an opposite circuit requires what they refer to as a conflicting event release. They have to apply for it 45 days in advance. The deadline to do so for the first Saudi event in London in June is next Monday, April 25th. The deadline by which the tour would have to respond to that is 30 days out, which would be May 10th.
What's the PGA Tour likely going to do with these waiver requests?
My guess is that they will grant most of them, perhaps with some kind of conditions attached, because the precedent exists there. It's basically another overseas money grab tournament, and players have been doing that on the PGA Tour for decades, going all the way back to the 80s and beyond, with players playing in Asia and elsewhere around the world, and this fits under that same criteria. So it would be rather difficult for the PGA Tour to suddenly decide that doesn't apply anymore.
Then how does the calculus change for the PGA Tour when the new league stages events in the United States, as they plan to do beginning in July in Portland?
It changes enormously, because under the PGA Tour's own bylaws, they cannot actually grant a waiver for any event held against its own schedule in the United States. Even if it was politically expedient in any way for the tour to do that, they are not permitted to do that. So July is really the kind of head-to-head situation.
With due respect to Robert Garrigues, he's a tour professional. He's won out there. You give him his due. But this is hardly a splashy rollout for a new enterprise. Do you expect, with this deadline looming, other players to announce their intentions in the next few days? If so, which players?
I'm not necessarily sure who's going to announce, but you can be pretty well assured that there will be players who are going to announce here, and probably a decent number of players who are going to announce, because they've probably made the calculus, and the Saudis have probably informed them of the calculus, that the tour is likely to grant those waivers. So we've seen the same names float around for several months at this point now, but you're going to see more hands go up before Monday.
If other players hypothetically see a guy like Garrigues end up competing, and let's say winning this first tournament, $4 million first prize against, let's be blunt, an inferior field. I mean, last week, Norman, who's just flailing at this point as the lead guy in this venture, announcing that amateurs, they'd be looking for amateurs to fill out the fields. That's how poorly it seems to be going, at least to this point. If Garrigues were to win $4 million, to what extent Could that draw other players who would look and say, wait a minute, he just made $4 million. I'm going to go get mine.
Well, that's the calculus that Greg Norman is depending on at this point. He actually said, for the record last week, that the strategy is essentially jealousy, is that elite players will see a journeyman, a Robert Garrigus of the world, win a $4 million prize fund and then say, I'm better than that guy, that money ought to be coming to me, and hope that that actually draws bigger names to his fields. But that could be a couple of years away.
The optics of this, if again, for LIV Golf, they're not good. I mean, you go from Phil and Bryson and DJ to amateurs and again, with due respect, and Robert Garrigus, how poorly is this rollout going?
It's starting to unravel the way Greg did in most final rounds of major championships, to be frank, in his entire career. But look at what's been promised here at this point. They promised that it was going to launch before now, in 2021. That didn't happen. They promised that it would be 18 tournaments around the world. That's not happening. They promised it would be a league format. That's not happening. They promised an elite team format. That's not happening. They promised a full commitment from the best players in the world. That's not happening. So they've promised the best, and at this point, all we're getting is kind of the rest.
Conjecture, but I'm curious, how do you think the Saudis feel about the way this rollout's going?
I think this is, they're learning what happens when you ally yourself with a polarizing blowhard who is frankly unpopular in the locker room. And Greg has been a tremendous player for his entire career. He is unpopular in the locker room. He's a bad choice as a recruiting
agent. Why is he unpopular in the locker room?
Because I think there's, like all of these guys who exist at the in the higher orders of the golf stratosphere, there's always been a certain amount of ego, and Greg has built a brand around himself that does encourage a certain degree of narcissism, and that is Greg's stock in trade. And the Saudis basically better acquaint themselves with the lower orders of the world rankings, because right now that's all they have.
Curious what you think about the major championships. Let's say a player announces this week an intention to tee it up outside of London in June. Do you think that same player would be able to play, for example, the US Open?
Yes, because I think it has now changed the parameters of this. When it was the case where the Saudis were looking for somebody to jump ship entirely and sign up with a new league, that was putting guys outside of the PL for a lot of the major championships. That's not what they're asking anymore. They're simply organising 8 tournaments. They're treating them as individual tournaments. They keep ratcheting down the ambition of this project all of the time. So now it's simply a case-by-case basis of guys requesting conflicting event waivers. But the problem the Saudis are ultimately going to have is a number of those events are organised in the United States, and there is zero chance that the PGA Tour can or will grant waivers then, and that's what triggers the head-to-head conflict.
As far as you know, is there a television deal signed for this new league?
Not that has made its way into any kind of public domain at all. They are trying to cultivate people to be play-by-play announcers for them, but there is no deal that they have announced yet.
All right. So Robert Garrigus, by the way, is down at the TPC Louisiana. That's where we find our own Rex Hoggard. Rex, what more can you tell us?
Rich, I had a chance to catch up with Robert Garrigus this morning. He was just starting a practice round with his teammate this week, Tom Gainey. He was a little surprised that the news has gotten out, that our colleague Eamon Lynch was able to break that news. And he said he did not want to make any comment at this time about it. He said he will talk about it in the future. He got a sponsor exemption to play in this event. He said he wants to focus on this event and try to focus on winning. He also kind of pointed out the timing that Eamon just pointed out. According to the tour regs, he had to file this within 45 days of that first round tee time of the LIV Golf Investment event. That's April 25th, which would be Monday. And he kind of pointed to the fact that everything seems to be coming to a head on that Monday. And he did allude to the idea of what Eamon just mentioned, that he's not the only one that's going to sign up and request this conflicting event release.
What's the reaction from some of the other players about this announcement, Rex?
Well, per you guys' conversation just now, as you pointed out, that the event in London is very much like any other event that the tour grants conflicting event releases. We go back just earlier this year in February, there was more than a dozen players who went and played the Saudi Internationals in the PGA Tour that were granted. And so that should not be a problem for at least the first event. As you pointed out, the next four are going to be played in the United States. And according to the tour regs, they will not grant competing event releases for events in North America. But there is a caveat. I was talking with one player who pointed out that the PGA Tour has allowed players to play in other events in the United States as long as they did not go head-to-head with that week's PGA Tour event. By that, I mean the match, which we just had one last year that included Phil Mickelson. Tiger Woods has played with it before, so it would depend on the timing. You could not have that event on Thursday through Sunday, but Monday through Wednesday would be a window that they could possibly do this. Another player I talked to, though, agreed with Amon that there would be no way, after the Tour has drawn this line, they would be willing to step back and allow guys to compete in conflicting events in the United States.
Rex, thank you. Amon, I guess, you know, from Garrigus's point of view, you could understand it. He's outside the top 1,000 in the world. He really has nothing. He's headed toward the PGA Tour champions. If he gets some starts out there at some point, fine. But he doesn't have a whole lot. So this must look like a pot of gold for a guy like that. And that it feels like that's the kind of guy they're attracting. So as a fan and an observer, I'm sitting here thinking, well, who cares? Like, why? Why watch this thing? I don't understand what they're doing here.
Isn't that the fundamental problem they face right now when you've promised the best players in the world and the best players in the world have to a man said, we're staying where we are, whether it's the European Tour or the PGA Tour, then they've got a problem. And you can understand why Robert Garrigus would go and play like this. In the last four seasons, since he actually played a complete season on the PGA Tour in 2018, he's made $300,000, $15 million for his career, but his career is clearly on the downswing right now, and that's the kind of guy that is going to look at this and see this is a great opportunity to, you know, make a couple of $100,000 for finishing last in a tournament, if that's what it comes to. And there are other guys who are wealthier and better off than a Robert Garrigus who are also inclined towards this kind of LIV Golf series because they're no longer competitive and, you know, it's an easy cash out.
This is a battle, and the PGA Tour sees it as such. They winning this battle right now?
I suspect they are winning it, but they're winning it as much by the incompetence of LIV Golf Investments and the Saudis and the battles that they've chosen to fight and the people that they've chosen to hire. I think that both tours, the PGA Tour and the European Tour, have played their cards pretty close to their vest and doing a lot of their backroom negotiating and diplomacy over the last couple of years, trying to build allies among players and certainly other tournaments and majors. But I think they've been helped enormously by the general bumbling nature of the Saudi enterprise.
And going forward, if you're the PGA Tour, you're Jay Monahan, you know you can't let your guard down at this point. Is the strategy just to continue to improve your product, your tour, and let the money flow so that these star players will never be tempted?
That can't be the strategy because you'll never have more money than the Saudis. So you can't make it a money battle. I think the tour needs to make it a legacy battle. If you go
Money still matters.
But you're either Jordan's Bulls or you're the Harlem Globetrotters. And that's the choice guys face here. And that's what the tours, whether it's Jay Monahan or Keith Pelley, that's what they have to lay out. That's the reality of the choice these guys need to make.
Right. So you saw that in the comments, I think it was at the players. Jay was talking about legacy, and they pointed to Joaquin Niemann holding up the trophy at the Genesis at Riviera and taking the trophy from Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. That's legacy. That's an opportunity that a young player like Niemann will not have. Care how much money they throw at him, he just won't have in the LIV Golf.
That's a little bit better than having a 54-hole shotgun start trophy handed to you by Greg Norman. Mm.
Some guys, though, are interested only in the money.
And we're about to find out who.
We're going to find out who. That's exactly right. Still to come, the 2022 International President's Cup captain, Trevor Immelman, has announced his four assistants for this year's event at Quail Hollow. He joins the show to reveal some names when we come back.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And Wind Grips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the Pro XE, experience the best. And by introducing the Cobra King Forge Tech Irons, a better player's iron.
Continuing on Golf Today in the 2022 President's Cup will be played at Quail Hollow Club in Charlotte, North Carolina, September 20 through 25. Today, the international captain, Trevor Immelman, the former Masters Tournament winner, announcing his four assistant captains. He's gone with Mike Weir, KJ Choi, Jeff Ogilvie, and Camilla Vijegas, who will be a first-time captain's assistant. And a pleasure to be joined now by the captain, Trevor Immelman. And Trevor, thank you for joining us. So what were the factors that led you to choose this outstanding group?
Great to join you guys, Rich. Look, there's a whole bunch of things that play into it. For sure, you're wanting to find guys that you know that your personality can meld with, guys that can complement your strengths and your weaknesses. Another thing that I thought was extremely important for me was to find guys that could cover all the different languages and cultures that our team represents. And so I think we've done a good job with that. And the cherry on the cake, really, for me, is just what amazing careers that these players have had, you know, winning the biggest tournaments on the biggest stages, from tour championships to the players to major championships. So I think we've got a nice blend of experience and youth. And so I like where we're at. Looking forward to September.
Just a quick follow-up on covering the different languages. I think we can all assume if he's healthy that Hideki Matsuyama will be there. And who knows if he goes on a little bit of a run, really promising young player in Takumi Kanaya. Who covers the Japanese players in that scenario?
Well, look, you know, you try and do the best that you can, Rich, with the amount of picks that you have at your disposal. I've spent a lot of time with Hideki over the last year or so, really getting to know him and his team, his interpreter Bob, his caddy Shota. So I feel like that's something that, quite frankly, I can cover. So I'm very comfortable with that. He is as well. He's comfortable with the fact that he now is stepping up into a leadership role within this international team. So that's something that I wasn't really too concerned about moving forward here as we approach September.
Trevor, how much is currency relevant to you in terms of your vice captains? Because obviously Jeff Ogilvie's back living in Australia now, although he was in the United States recently working on some golf course projects. KJ and Mike Weir are a little older. Camilo is obviously the most relevant in terms of the playing activity right now. Is that a consideration at all, how much time these assistant captains will spend around your potential team members in the run-up to the President's Cup?
Yeah, it's absolutely at the top of my mind, really, to be quite honest with you. Mike and KJ still competing on PGA Tour champions, and so they're still out and about at a lot of regular tour events as well. Mike is here this week at the Zurich Classic. So is Jeff Ogilvie. As you say, he's been down in Australia, but still in touch with the majority of the players. So I think we're set up quite well there from an experience standpoint. And then adding Camilo now as somebody who still plays on the tour, he really is up to speed with all the trends, all the players, all the caddies, everything that's going on out here. So I think he's been a great addition to the rest of us that have already served in some type of assistant captain role. So like I touched on earlier, I think it's a pretty cool blend of experience and now the youth coming in with Camilo, the passion, the positivity that he brings, and the representation that he gives the South American and Mexican players, of which there is a ton of talent coming out of there right now.
It's early, Trevor, but what do you like about your team, and specifically which players are potentially formidable for you?
Well, there's a whole number of them that I think are formidable. Look, professional golf is so deep right now, and we've seen so much talent coming through from the international ranks, so to speak. If you just take a look at what happened in 2019 at Royal Melbourne, we had seven rookies on that team of 12. And in fact, we were the youngest team ever represented in the President's Cup. And so now we're starting to build on that. Some of those youngsters have got a little bit more experience now. They've played in some more major championships. They've thrown their hat in the ring. They've won bigger tournaments when you look at the likes of Cam Smith and Joaquin Niemann. And you start to add those youngsters' names to the likes of Hideki and Leishman and Scott and Oosthuizen and all of these guys that will possibly be making up the final 12. It's a team that I really like the feel of. We're very, very hungry. We understand that we've had a tough record in this tournament. We've got our butts kicked a hell of a lot. We came real close at Royal Melbourne, and so that spurred us on a little bit. But we're also very well aware, Rich, of just how formidable the American team is. That performance of theirs at the Ryder Cup was extremely impressive, record-breaking, really. And, you know, even when you take a look at that Sunday singles, those guys didn't take their foot off the gas for 1 second. You almost got the feeling like they wanted to run that scoreboard up. So we know exactly how huge a mountain of it is to climb. But really, when you're a kid growing up in whatever corner of the globe that our team grew up in, whether it be Japan or South Africa or Australia or Chile, all you ever wished for as a youngster when you were dedicating your youth and your junior days to trying to get as good as you could in this game, all you ever wished for was an opportunity to compete against the best. And we're now going to have that opportunity. We're going to be able to compete against maybe the best American team ever put together. They're filled with confidence. They're playing on home soil. And so we have a massive challenge in front of us, but it's something we thoroughly look forward to.
I'm sensing Trevor's getting like the European Ryder Cup captains of old here, who are managing expectations and heaping all the pressure on the American team before we actually get there. But Trevor, you mentioned the seven rookies 3 years ago at Royal Melbourne being one of the disadvantages for the international team. Another disadvantage was Royal Melbourne in the sense that a lot of the team would not have been that familiar with the golf course. Is it an advantage to you, or at least a help this time around, that Quail Hollow has been a regular tour venue for so long, so your guys are more likely to be familiar with where they're playing?
Well, I mean, funny enough, we actually saw it the other way down at Royal Melbourne. We thought that the fact that not many of the players on both teams had played that course was to our advantage, particularly because our captain was Ernie Els, and he had had such an amazing record at that particular golf course. So he really could provide us with a blueprint of how to plot our way around that golf course. And so the youngsters on that team really, they just sucked that up like they were a sponge, and they were great listeners. And when you have that kind of talent and you add a little bit of knowledge like that, I think that's why we saw some really good golf from our team in the first few days. Like you say, Quail Hollow, everybody knows it. There's going to be nobody on either team that hasn't played that golf course. Maybe even played a major championship there when the PGA was there a few years back. Definitely have played the tour event, the Wells Fargo, that has been there for a number of years. So there's going to be no surprises for anybody from a golf course standpoint at Quail Hollow. So it's going to be interesting to see how Captain Love decides to set the golf course up. I'm sure there's not going to be very much rough, and the greens are going to be lightning fast and extremely firm. That's what I'm anticipating. Hopefully, the weather plays along for him from that standpoint so that he can get the golf course exactly how it wants. And we'll give it our best shot, man. We just cannot wait for this opportunity. I love Charlotte. I've spent a ton of time there over the years. It's an amazing city, an amazing sporting city. And there's going to be a lot of fans out there supporting their team. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Trevor, you touched on this a little bit earlier. I'd like, if possible, to go a tiny bit deeper. One of the challenges has always been for the international side, bridging these cultural divides, talking about language, customs, all of it. Specifically, how have you tried to do that?
You got to invest time. You got to invest time, Rich. It's just like anything. You have to be able to get in there, in and amongst these players, start to understand what makes them tick, start to understand what their strengths and weaknesses are, maybe what their insecurities and vulnerabilities are, and then you move from there, trying to complement that in the best way possible. And really for us as captains, a group of captains that is now completed today, and our partners, our wives that are with us, we're just trying to make sure that we have all the ancillary stuff covered, make sure that we get the correct foods for these guys. You got to understand, with all these different cultures that we represent, what our buffet line looks like. I mean, we need to make sure that there's a lot of different things covered. And so those are the tiny little things that maybe nobody thinks of that are extremely important to us, to make sure that all these players and their families are comfortable, they're at ease, because I've just found over the years that is when professional athletes perform their best, is when they are able to be authentic, when they're able to be comfortable and comfortable in their own skin. So that's our job as captains, really. And once we've done that, it's up to these guys to bring their A game.
I think you have a chance to put together a really good team. I'm looking at the depth there. I think you have some depth that maybe you didn't in years past. What our old colleague Frank Nabilo, you work with Frank at CBS, used to call the tail of the lineup, I think is much stronger when you go down to Corey Connors and maybe a Mito Pereira, Carlos Ortiz, a Mackenzie Hughes, Minwoo Lee, all these guys that will be competing to make your team. You're talking about 11 guys on the international side in the top 50 of the world, 6 in the top 20, and I think they have an excellent captain too. Trevor, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. Good luck going forward.
It's great to join you guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Take care. Trevor Immelman, I really do think he has his finger on the pulse. And I think Ernie did a great job down in Australia. And you see it. These are all international possibilities, Eamon, that have won already on tour this year.
And you could make a strong argument that Cameron Smith is the second best player in the world right now behind Scottie Scheffler. Right. Well, Rich, from the President's Cup to the King's Cup. Or the Arnold Palmer Cup, to be specific. Both teams are being announced right here on Golf Today. We'll reveal the US squad next and be joined by two of its star players.
Back on Golf Today, that's a look at Geneva, Switzerland. That will be the site of the upcoming Arnold Palmer Cup, early July. Co-founded by the co-founder of this network, beloved Arnold Palmer, and as well the Golf Coaches Association of America back in 1997. It's a Ryder Cup style team event. U.S. against the internationals, mixed four ball, morning foursomes and mixed foursomes in the afternoon, making it a bit different than, say, a Walker Cup. And then July 3rd will be the singles. Here are the teams. Let's start with the men. These were automatic qualifiers. Sam Bennett, Texas A&M, Cole Sherwood, Vanderbilt, Johnny Kiefer from Baylor, Gordon Sargent, Vanderbilt, Travis Vick from Texas, Walker Lee, Texas A&M. SEC is showing out. USA team committee selections, Michael Brennan of Wake Forest, Jake Doggett, Midwestern State, Palmer Jackson of Notre Dame, Dylan Menante of Pepperdine, Michael Torbjornsson of Stanford, and then Nick Gabrielczyk of North Florida was a USA coach's pick. And pleased to be joined now by a member of Team USA. No doubt that has to sound really good. Man from Texas A&M, Sam Bennett, who is coming to us from Sea Island, Georgia, getting set for the Biggie Southeastern Conference Championship. Sam, thanks for joining us. This will be your second Arnold Palmer Cup, so you can speak to it. What do you love about the Palmer Cup?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, I'm very happy to be able to compete again. And it's going to be cool, you know, this year going to international soil in Switzerland. That's going to be a dream come true. And, you know, it's just cool. I mean, anytime you get to represent your country in an event like this and represent Arnie's legacy, I mean, it really is a dream come true. And what's cool about the Palmer Cup is, you know, it's more than just a golf tournament. I mean, you form relationships with, you know, players that you never really thought you'd, you know, be hanging out with. And, you know, we have team dinners and playing ping pong and just cutting it up in the room. And, you know, the golf's fun, but I mean, outside the golf course is where, you know, it's really cool to be a part of.
Sam, you mentioned Arnold Palmer's legacy. And one of the fun parts of this cup is that every team votes for the person on their team who they believe most represents Arnold Palmer's values. And the winning team, the top vote getter, gets an invite to play in the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Last time around, that was you. What did it mean to you to have your peers choose you based on the values of Arnold Palmer rather than on your play?
Yeah, you know, that's a lot. You know, that means a lot, you know, being voted for that. And I thank my peers for that. You know, kind of like Scotty said, like golf really, I don't want golf to define me. I'd rather be, you know, a good person off the course and represent my school, my family well. So, you know, that meant a lot for my peers to be able to, you know, pick me for that award. And, you know, it was an unreal experience being able to tee it up at Bay Hill this year. Unfortunately, I didn't, you know, take advantage of that opportunity, but I was really, you know, blessed to be given that opportunity.
Sam, no doubt enough talent to have turned professional. You chose to stay at Texas A&M. Why did you return to college? And what are your future plans?
Yeah, you know, coming to A&M, I mean, I wanted to graduate, and you know, everything, you know, came so quick for me with my father dying, and just all of a sudden, just you know, winning four times and becoming one of the best players in the world. And I feel like I need some more time to mature on the course and off the course. And you know, I believe that's saying as an amateur next year, I'm still going to be ranked pretty high in the PGA Tour U based off my play this year, and hopefully, I'll be able to, you know, get some more exemptions. And some tour events as an amateur. So when I start playing this game for some money, I'll be really prepared for that.
I think it worked really well for two guys that I can name off the top of my head. I'm thinking about the Masters champion, Scottie Scheffler, and Colin Morikawa from Cal. Sam, thank you. Good luck going forward. Play well this week at the SEC Championships. We appreciate your time and everything you've done for college golf.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks for having me.
Take care. What an outstanding young man, Sam Bennett. And now the USA women. These were the automatic qualifiers, and these are some recognizable names. I mean, these are some college superstars. Rose Zhang from Stanford, Amari Avery from Southern Cal, Rachel Keene, Wake Forest, Gerline Cora Baylor. And you see Arizona State, San Jose State. So the western part of the United States is well represented. In addition, Rachel Heck, we've seen plenty of Rachel Heck. Olivia Mitchell from Dallas Baptist non-Division I representative. And the team is rounded out with the USA coach's pick. That is Julia Johnson of Ole Miss. And now we're pleased to be joined by Wake Forest, Rachel Keene, who will be playing in her third Arnold Palmer Cup. Rachel, thank you for joining us. I want to start, before we get to the Palmer Cup, with your experience at the Augusta National Women's Amateur. You shot 69 in the final round. That was a sensational performance, solo seventh. I'm always curious about this. If you could drop a bag of balls in one spot, one hole at Augusta National, like tee at 12, second at 13, tee at 16, where would you go after having been there?
Definitely the tee at 12. It's just incredible. It's the scenery. It's something you get to see on TV every year. And such a hard iron shot to begin with, but I'd hit it over and over again if I could.
Rachel, you've played Curtis Cup, which your mother did twice. Once you've played on that kind of a team stage, does it make other team competitions a little bit easier for you, or does each one come with its own individual kind of pressure?
I think each time you get to play on any kind of team, especially when it's representing your country, there is a little bit of pressure and there's some buildup to it. And it's something that I don't think anyone ever takes for granted, so I don't think it gets easier or it gets harder. I just think you... every time you get that opportunity, you just get so excited and you just really cherish the memories of the week.
What's different about the Palmer Cup versus, say, the Curtis Cup?
The fact that we get to play with the guys is really cool because we don't obviously see them at tournaments or anything. We never get to tee it up with them. So I think that's really fun. It's really cool to get to develop those relationships with the guys and also from girls from other schools because obviously, I'm super close to my teammates, but to get to play alongside with girls from other schools is really cool, too.
Now, Rachel, you're making a start next week on the LPGA Tour in Los Angeles. What does your schedule look like as you build up towards the Arnold Palmer Cup?
Yeah, so I'm headed out to Palos Verdes this coming week, and then after that will be NCAA Regionals. We don't know where we'll get sent yet. Then hopefully NCAA Nationals, and then... I'll play a U.S. Open qualifier in the middle there, so fingers crossed for that. And then Curtis Cup, and I guess from there is Palmer. Palmer Cup is next.
Rachel, as a Wake Forest student and athlete, no doubt you're familiar with Arnold Palmer, and we just talked to Sam, who won that award and was granted an exemption to the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So from where you're sitting, what are the values that Arnold Palmer espoused and that you feel are important to carry forth in competitions like the Palmer Cup, but really wherever you go and play golf?
Absolutely. I think first and foremost is Arnold Palmer was all about sportsmanship. You know, being kind to the spectators, to the people you're playing with, to the people that have put the tournament on. There's so many people that are involved in every given week and just being thankful for that and handling your wins and your losses with grace. And I think along with that comes humility. You know, there is no bigger name in golf than Arnold Palmer. And yet he always took the time to talk to everyone, to sign autographs, always legibly. But I just think that he is everything good that is golf. And to be able to carry that into the Arnold Palmer Cup, I think is just such an honor. And I hope that everyone that is playing this year can exhibit that too.
Mm, that is beautifully and perfectly said. Rachel, thank you. Say hi to your mom for us.
I will. Thank you for having me.
Best of luck in the coming weeks. We look forward to watching you later this summer in Europe at the Arnold Palmer Cup. Rachel Keane, standout and great young performer and great young person from Wake Forest. Still to come, another guy who had a pretty nice experience at Augusta National, Scottie Scheffler, in the field this week at the Zurich Classic. More on Scottie in a moment.
It's been 9 days since Scottie Scheffler won a green jacket and probably 9 nights that he slept in it. But it's time to pull on his work clothes again. The Masters champion is back in action, teamed with the best recruiter in golf at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. We'll explain. We'll also be joined by a man who did something that no one else has ever accomplished in the history of the Korn Ferry Tour. We'll explain that one too. And in keeping with the team theme, we'll unveil the international squad that will take on the US in the Arnold Palmer Cup in July. Golf Today continues now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
TPC Louisiana playing host to the Zurich Classic this week. Originally, this was an individual event, history dating to the 1930s. Became a two-man team event back in 2017. Seems to have found a nice place on the PGA Tour as the only team event of the year. Rich Lerner alongside Eamon Lynch. We achieved a first today. We led with Robert Garrigus today. How did that happen?
Well, I think we're entering a strange era in golf. We might see stranger names come up in the days and weeks ahead.
So you expect some more news to be dropping in the next 3-4 days?
Yeah, I don't think any player is necessarily going to be in a hurry to announce. They're putting their hand up to seek a waiver to play in the Saudi event in London, but there are certainly going to be more players who do that. And it's, you know, it's a straightforward situation. The tour has set a precedent for overseas events that I think it would be difficult for them to reject. There may be strings attached, as there were for the Saudi event in February, but I think we're going to see a lot of players do that. It's a lot trickier, though, when the next event rolls around.
You've been reporting this story from the start. Is it your sense there will be a name or two that will get our attention?
Certainly more so than the name of Robert Garrigus will get anyone's attention at this point. But I think you're still going to see players who fit into a particular criteria, which is guys who are generally on the back end of their careers, who aren't really competitive or great money earners on the PGA Tour anymore, but more so they aren't particularly competitive because the best players in the world have all said they're staying where they are.
Bizarre last week when Greg Norman, who's fronting this initiative, announced that they would be looking at amateurs to fill out some of these fields. You have any inclination as to whether, you know, some of these college superstars we've already interviewed today would look at a big money grab like that?
Well, ultimately, if you're a college player and you're going to remain an amateur, it's not so much the money grab as it is the competitive sharpness. And there are plenty of other places to get that. I think what you may even see is the Greg Norman start to dip into the Champions Tour. I mean, there's a lot of brand names out there, even if they are, again, no longer competitive on the PGA Tour or European Tour. So he's looking for names anywhere he can find them to fill a field at this point. He doesn't want to have to rely on Robert Garrigus or other journeymen, but that's what the tour is looking like at the moment.
And by the way, amateurs now can cash in with NIL, name, image, and likeness. All right, now to the tournament at hand. When you hear the words dream team, I love basketball, so you go back to 1992, considered to be the greatest collection of talent. Any one team. There's Coach Daly, late great Chuck Daly, Charles Barkley. He was so physical. There he is with Magic Johnson. I always love what the Cuban coach Miguel Calderon Gomez said after the Cubans lost a qualifying game to the Dream Team by 79 points. He said, "You can't cover the sun with your finger." They were never, I mean never, remotely challenged. They won the gold medal game, I think, against Croatia by a mere 32 points. There's only one guy on that team that
is not in the Hall of Fame, and that's Christian Laettner, who was at the time a superstar playing for Coach K at Duke. All right, now to some golf dream teams. Snead and Hogan, both born 1912, along with Byron Nelson, known as the American Triumvirate. Snead tied with Tiger, most PGA Tour wins, 82. Hogan has 64, one of golf's fiercest competitors. All right, Jack and Arnie, they won the old Canada Cup, which became the World Cup, four times in the 1960s. Ryder Cup, they actually lost a match in 1973 to Maurice Bembridge and Brian Huggett. And that's a great picture, isn't it? Faldo and Wee Woozy.
Little and large. Mm.
they helped the Europeans to that victory on U.S. soil. That was at the first time Europe ever won. That was at Muirfield Village, 1987. 6 points from their 10 matches played across three Ryder Cups, five wins, two halves, three losses. Probably the best partnership would have to be what they called the Spanish Armada. They made their debut in 87 at Muirfield Village, beating the Americans, and Jack played together a record 15 times. They won 12 points. That's the most in history. As long as we're talking about great teams, I think you also have to mention Davis and Freddie. They won the World Cup four times together. And more recently, Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa. They were unbeaten in three tries at Whistling Straits. Eamon, teams that you love.
I'm just amazed
right
that
here.
You and Chambly weren't on that list of golf dream teams as well, Rich. The one that strikes me here is Colin Morikawa and Victor Hovland. I mean, the average combined world rank there is 3.5. That's got to be a pretty intimidating team to go up against this week. Obviously, Schauffele and Cantlay are hoping to follow in on their Ryder Cup success. And then the defending champions. Leishman hasn't been in great form lately, but Cameron Smith has been in probably the second best form in golf right now.
Yeah, keep an eye on Joaquin Niemann and Mito Pereira. I think they could do some damage. Let's go back down to the TPC Louisiana. Rex Hoggard is there. Scottie Scheffler back in action. He's alongside Ryan Palmer. Palmer, who's had Jordan Spieth and he's had John Rahm. They won together, Palmer and Rahm. He's like the Nick Saban. As long as we're looking at other sports, he's the Nick Saban of the golf world because he can recruit some talent, can he? Rex, what more can you tell us?
Well, it's funny, Rich. I asked him about that this morning when I saw him when he arrived at the golf course. And I asked him if he had seen Justin Thomas's tweet, which kind of takes a funny poke and kind of calls him out on the idea that you only want partners who are ranked number one in the world. And Ryan was real quick to point out that he corrected him. Back in 2018, when he was paired with Jordan Spieth, they actually missed the cut that year here in New Orleans. Jordan was ranked third in the world. In 2019, when he first played with John Rahm, when they won, John Rahm was ranked 11th in the world. And last year, Rahm was third in the world when they came in here and they ended up finishing seventh. So he pointed out that's a 4.5 average counting this year with world number one Scottie Scheffler. So he said JT needed to get his math right on that front. He said, but this is a relationship of marriage sort of that started just a few weeks ago in Los Angeles at the Genesis Invitational. They started talking about maybe pairing up at this event, and it seemed like a good fit. They both share the same swing coach, Randy Smith. They both run in the same circles in Dallas, and they both have very, very similar personalities, and they felt like it would be a good match. Now, Ryan did say, after Scottie won the Masters, he was a little bit concerned that he might, understandably, want to take this week off and get a little bit of rest. So he called him on the Tuesday after the Masters, and they congratulated him. They talked for a little while, and he said Scottie hung up the phone right before he told him, let's keep it rolling in New Orleans. Rich?
Rex, there's a couple of other interesting teams out there as well. You know, G-Max playing with Seamus Power. There's the old Ryder Cup duo of Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson. One that kind of caught my eye, it's a little stroll down memory lane here. Bill Haas is playing with his father, Jay, who's 68 years old. Is this kind of Jay's swan song to the PGA Tour?
I think it is. I mean, I've spoken with Jay in recent years about playing a PGA Tour event just because he wants to spend time around Bill. And Jay's always been very, very reluctant. He would never want to take a spot from someone else in the field. But the way this field is generated, you really aren't taking a spot. That it's a team event and it's something that they can enjoy together. Now, the interesting thing here is Jay has become kind of Bill's default swing coach off the golf course. So this gives them an opportunity to just not to work together, but to see how Bill is performing inside the rope. So it's going to be enjoyable for the father-son duo.
Rex, thank you. We appreciate it. Let's talk a little bit more about Scottie Scheffler. And by the way, the tournament format is four balls, the first and third rounds, and then alternate shot rounds two and four. Scottie Scheffler, and by the way, this would be an official win.
Yeah.
Okay. Not full FedEx Cup points. Was it they split the 500? His chance to put together an epic season. Four wins in a major already, and we're at the middle of April. He could put a season together better even than the one Jordan Spieth gave us in 2015, which was five wins with two majors, the first two majors of the year, the Masters and the U.S. Open. That's where we're at with Scottie Scheffler.
We are, and he's already said the Southern Hills, where the next major championship is going to be played, is his favorite golf course. And that's got to worry a few guys out there as well.
If Scottie Scheffler, he won the Big 12.
He did. And he's clearly very comfortable in the biggest moments. You know, he talked quite openly when he was sitting in the green jacket about how he'd wept that morning because he didn't think he was ready for the moment. And then he went out there and proved that he is. And that's the biggest moment Scottie Scheffler is going to face in his entire career. Everything else that comes from this point onwards, he's going to have gone through the cauldron that would have scarred him the most had it gone wrong. And it didn't. He was up to the challenge. And he looked wobbly early, but he proved that he's up to the challenge. He's winning on a lot of different style golf courses against a lot of different competition. But every time he's called upon in a moment, he actually delivers.
He's obviously red hot right now. And we'll see how this goes over the next couple of years. And I'll put the question to you that I put to Brandel and Paul the week of the Masters. He's comfortably at number one in the world now. So in what ways is he better, significantly better than the guys that are chasing him, Rahm, Thomas, McIlroy, and keep going?
In terms of skill set, I'm not sure he is, because you look at Scottie Scheffler and he's very much in the middle of the pack in almost every statistical category. Very solid throughout the bag, but not excellent in any particular area. What I think the advantage...
He's 16 strokes gained putting. That's you're getting toward elite territory if you're there. But it's a very well-rounded... If you look in stats, statistical package, you're talking a 16 strokes gained putting, 29 strokes gained around the green, 28 strokes gained.
He's top 30 everywhere, but he's not top 10 anywhere, except, I think, from the neck up. And that's where Scottie Scheffler's real advantage is. He's so even-keeled. And you see a lot of guys get emotional with the highs and lows in a round of golf, or even the slump from tournament to tournament.
So that's
separate. You don't see that with Scottie Scheffler at all. I actually think more pressure this week is on his partner, Ryan Palmer. I mean, he's under pressure not to derail the freight train that Scottie Scheffler's riding at the moment.
But don't you think this is a nice sort of bounce-back tournament off the tremendous high of the Masters, a team event, right? It's good food. You sort of ease back into competition.
Sure, I definitely think it's a lot less pressure than coming out to play another major, WGC or Wells Fargo or something like that. And he's got a good record here. He finished eighth last year, partnering with Bubba Watson. They were only two back going into the final round. Of course, they couldn't keep that partnership together because who gets custody of Ted Scott as the caddy this time around? But, you know, it's definitely the right event for a guy to come back from when he's just slipped into a green jacket.
I think latest odds from PointsBet, at least they were yesterday, had Jon Rahm as the favorite for the PGA Championship. I think he was at 11-1. And then just behind was Scottie Scheffler at 12-1. Should Scheffler be the favorite?
Scottie Scheffler should be the favorite every time he tees it up right now. And as excellent as Jon Rahm is, Jon has not won since the US Open last June. The one-year anniversary of that's getting closer and closer. To me, Scottie Scheffler ought to be the bookie's favorite every time he plays.
And by the way, we sat here in January, we did this show, and I felt strongly that Jon Rahm was going to become a dominant number one player in the world. It hasn't happened. I don't think anybody saw Scottie Scheffler as we got to the third week of April. Scottie Scheffler as the strong number one player in the world with four wins.
Scottie Scheffler might have, though.
Back on golf today, it was quite the week for Veritex Bank. Defending champ Tyson Alexander played a Tuesday pro-am with Ryan Palmer. Then on Wednesday, threw out the first pitch, the Rangers' second home game of the season. That's one of the assistant coaches, Tony Beasley, and that is Rangers captain. That's the team mascot. I always think Nolan Ryan. We'll see if Tyson was able to throw a little gas out there on the mound. He wins the tournament, by the way, first to successfully defend a title in the history of the Korn Ferry Tour. More on that in a moment. He goes from 73 to number 8 on the points list inside those beautiful Lucchese boots. So he now has two pair. And if everything goes well in his career, he will not get a third pair of those Lucchese boots. And Tyson Alexander is joining us now. Tyson, thanks for being with us. All right, first things first, how's the fit and the feel of the Lucchese boots? And what'd you do with that pitch, that first pitch at the Rangers game?
Yeah, the boots are great. First pair of cowboy boots ever. So, yeah, they look pretty good. The pitch, on the other hand, it wasn't my best. It was I didn't throw heat, and I kind of lobbed it in there. I kind of played it safe.
You didn't bounce it in, though.
Definitely, I didn't bounce it in. I heard that was the one thing you can't do. So
it was just like a ball high and outside. Anything?
I think it was over the plate. It was just a little.
Okay. I love it. Go ahead, Eamon.
Tyson, winning on the Corn Ferry Tour usually all but guarantees guys a card for the next season on the PGA Tour. But last year, because of the pandemic, it turned into basically two seasons in one, 41 stops. So you kind of got shortchanged a little bit. Did that drive you this year to try to win again and get the card that you probably should have gotten last year?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, in 2020, I didn't play very good golf at all. So I probably would have lost my Corn Ferry card that year, to be honest with you. And then 2021, I played a little better, had a win, obviously, had another top finish later in the year. So, yeah, I got shortchanged in 2021, but I think maybe the COVID year helped me in 2020. So I just, you know, you got to take it all in good with the bad. And, yeah, just looking forward to moving forward.
Tyson, you're 33 years old. You've been at this a long time, and you've not yet officially made it to the PGA Tour. You are better in what ways right now than you've ever been?
I mean, the easy one would be experience. You know, I've been through a lot. I think I know myself a little bit better. I feel like I kind of have a really good grasp on what kind of makes me tick and what I need to work on and, how I need to operate day in and day out, week in and week out. And, just, you know, how to be the best pro I can be. And, you know, it takes time sometimes. And, I think I'm kind of getting it.
Tyson, you're as old as the Corn Ferry Tour itself, and you're the first winner who's ever gone back to back in the entire history.
That was slightly
of the
cruel
tour
right there.
No, he's a lot younger than we are, Rich, right now. But is it safe to assume, it's something to be proud of, being the first back-to-back winner in the history of the Corn Ferry Tour. Is it something that you aspire to not to defend the title again, that you don't want to be there next year to go for three in a row?
Absolutely. Yeah, I told someone not too long ago that I want to be in Dallas next year, but just at a different tournament, different tour. So, the Corn Ferry Tour is so good, and there's just been a lot of great players that come through there. So the fact that I'm the only one that's defended a title, I think that's pretty cool. And anytime you can make history, it's pretty neat.
Tyson, you're third generation part of one of golf's, I think, greatest families. Your dad, Buddy, longtime coach at the University of Florida, also the 1986 U.S. Amateur champion. And then your late grandfather, Skip Alexander. I know you've shared this story before. For those who don't know it, I think it's worth hearing again. What was so amazing about your grandfather, if you don't mind?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great story. He was a great player, played professionally, was a Ryder Cupper in 49. And I think he was just kind of hitting his stride, honestly. In 50, he was off to a good start and had a plane crash, was the only survivor. And it took him out of 50 and most of 51 and had a bunch of surgeries, had a bunch of burns on his body, but came back and played golf and ended up making enough points to make the 51 Ryder Cup team in Pinehurst and didn't play until the singles. Kind of was a, you know, thought of as maybe like a health risk. And so they put him out in singles against, I think, the leading money winner of the European Tour at the time, and ended up winning his match, I think 8-6 or 8-7.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a pretty cool story. I don't think a lot of people know about it, and but it's they did a Sports Illustrated article not too long ago about it. It's worth a read.
Yeah, he beat John Patton, and it was 8-7 in singles, and that was the team captain by Sam Snead. So no doubt, you know, when times get difficult for you, or if they have in the past, I'm sure you've reminded yourself of what your grandfather endured and what he was able to overcome. Was recipient of the Ben Hogan Award for a player overcoming physical challenges in 1959. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, he was tough as nails. My dad's old school, and I think they kind of instilled that in me a little bit. I feel like I'm pretty tough, and I'm not scared to get down and dirty and work hard and get after it.
Congratulations. That's a great win last weekend. And no doubt we're going to see you, as long as we were talking baseball, we'll see you in the show. That'll be the PGA Tour. I have no doubts later this year as we get that 2022-23 season started, and you'll be in that rookie class if all continues to go well. Tyson, keep it going, and thanks for stopping by with us.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
We'll see a lot of the next generation of Korn Ferry Tour stars in action at the Arnold Palmer Cup this summer. Coming up next, we'll talk to two members of the international team.
One of the great amateur events, team events in the sport is the Arnold Palmer Cup, co-founded by Arnold and the Golf Coaches Association of America in 1997. They're going back to Geneva in Switzerland. What a beautiful spot. It's a Ryder Cup style team event. It'll be in early July. Here's the format. What separates this event, you see a mixed four ball, so the men and women get a chance to compete alongside one another. Four ball and foursomes, and then singles on that final day, July 3rd. Now, a nice message from a major champion. Here's Graham McDowell.
Hey guys, Graham McDowell here. I wanted to just say a big congratulations to all 48 participants of this year's Palmer Cup. Geneva, Switzerland, that should be a lot of fun. I played two Palmer Cups. They were really great memories for me. All the team golf that I've been part of in my life, Walker Cups, Palmer Cups, and then Ryder Cups, they really have been special, special experiences. And everything that Mr. Palmer meant to the game of golf, you guys will be out there representing him. And enjoy yourself, represent your countries with pride, and enjoy that team bonding and that camaraderie, and go get it. Play well.
That's a nice message from GMAC. So earlier we revealed the American teams, both men and women. Now the international side. These are the automatic qualifiers. Fred Biondi, Fred at the Latin America Amateur, nice young man and can really play. You see some of the Scandinavian countries are well represented. Keep an eye on, we're going to talk to him in just a moment, Eugenio Chicara from Spain and Oklahoma State is a terrific young talent. And now the committee selections for the international side. So you see a player from Wales, De Oliveira from Argentina, part of that Latin connection that's at Arkansas. Rasmus Nyegaard Petersen, Oklahoma State as well, from Denmark. And then the coach's pick was James Liao from Arizona State and Singapore. And with that, we welcome Eugenio Chicara of Oklahoma State. He posted a 4-0 record at the 2021 Palmer Cup. Eugenio, thanks for joining us. And what stays with you to this day? Your vivid memories from the Palmer Cup that you played in.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I mean, Palmer Cup is a special week. I mean, representing Mr. Palmer and all he did for golf is something special. And yeah, going back to last year's Palmer Cup, I think he makes a lot of friendships, and it's a really special week. I mean, you got the chance of playing with some other guys that you never have to, and you have played some foursomes, you played with some girls, and kind of like get new friends in the golf world. And I think it's like a very, very unique event, and I'm really proud to be able to play it again. And I just saw one of my best friends and teammates, Rasmus Nyegaard, is also being selected. So, I mean, it's going to be even funner. So I'm excited for the week, and hopefully my sister will make it as well so I can play with her. That will be really special for me and my family. And I can't wait for the week, and I hopefully this year we can beat the Americans. I mean, they're always really tough to beat, but I mean, we'll for sure have a lot of fun.
Eugenio, you went 4-0 last time in the Palmer Cup. What did that actually do for your confidence heading into a program as competitive as Oklahoma State?
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm a, I really like match play golf, and I feel like when I'm hitting good and I'm playing my best, I'm really tough to beat because I'm pretty much in play every time, and I kind of like ball striking, driving. And last year in Richard's Farm, great course for me. I mean, you need to beat the ball in the fairway, and I hit a lot of fairways, and my putting was good that week, so I was pretty hard to beat. I mean, I beat Pearson in singles. It was a really good match, and I mean, it was fun. It was fun to help the team to with 4 points, but obviously it was a great week to make a lot of friends and have some fun.
Eugenio, you mentioned your sister Carolina. Earlier this year, it was February, she won a tournament, you won a tournament, and you both shot 62 in the final round. I mean, that's just incredible. So curious, how were you two introduced to the game, and how close are you still today?
Yeah, I mean, we're really close. We're best friends. So every time we're back home, we practice together. We got the same mental coach, same swing coach, same strength coach. So we do everything together. So, I mean, we both had a really good preseason, and I always say, like, when I won, I call her, we talk every day, and I told her, I just did it, so just go do it. And then she got her second win before I did also, so I was like, when she won the second one, I wanted to win a second one as well. So, I mean, we're just trying to push each other every day, and we get better every day, and I love her, and we're really, really close.
You just
it'll be really special if she can play.
You just announced, Eugenio, that you're going to stay in college for another year. You're not going to try to pursue a Corn Ferry Tour card through the PGA Tour University. What kind of went into that decision for you?
Well, I mean, it was obviously a tough decision. Once you're in the top five and you got your Corn Ferry Tour thing secure, it's kind of hard to make the decision. But when I came here to Oklahoma State, they gave the coaches, Coach Starr and Coach Brown, gave me the chance to play for this program, and I said I was going to play until 2023, and I feel like my work was more important than just a simple ranking. And I feel like for me graduating for my majors, and I told my parents that I was always going to finish my degree, and I feel like those things are all more important than money and just throw life. The PGA Tour, the Conference Tour, all those tours were going nowhere, and you can only play 4 years of college golf. So when I went to decide, it was pretty easy. I mean, I know what I said to coaches that I was going to stay. I knew what I promised my dad and mom, that I was going to finish my degree. And I knew how, like, I'm going to still get better and improve every next one more year to be on tour. I don't know if you guys saw what John Rahm said in the Masters. Like, I mean, one difference of year is not going to make a huge difference. So I just going to try to keep better, practice every day as hard as I'm doing, and try to get better and be ready for the PGA Tour University next year.
And you're making a good decision. I think we mentioned this earlier. Scottie Scheffler stayed, got his degree from the University of Texas, just won the Masters. Colin Morikawa already with two majors. He has his degree from Cal's Business School. By the way, I have some breaking news for you, Eugenio. Your sister has made the team.
Nice. There we go.
she's on that team. Hey,
nice.
I'm curious, Eugenio, I know last fall you went to the broomstick putter. Why'd you do it, and how has it paid off?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a game changer for me. I mean, that's kind of like what all my success has been for. Like, I hit the ball, like I say, really good every time. So it's been like that for last years, but my putting was kind of leading me down. And actually, it was in my call by the PGA Tour event that I hit the ball really good. I hit a lot of greens, and that's all you need to, and a lot of fairways, and that's what you need to do on that course. And I putted really, really bad. So I was with Aaron Wise in the range, and I saw him, he was using a broomstick, and I kind of started talking to him about it and why he changed to that and all that. So what he said kind of like makes sense, and I had some of the same feelings. So I was talking to my team and Coach Brown about it, and we decided to go for it and try it. And it was kind of weird at the store, but I mean, which I put a lot of work in the preseason, and it's been amazing. I mean, I have fun playing golf again. I get into the greens, and I think I can make every putt, and my stroke feels really, really good. So I start the ball on the line. So it's been a huge improvement for me and my game, and I hope it stays like that. I'm pretty excited.
Eugenio, thank you for taking the time. Congratulations on all your success. Good luck going forward. I know there's some big events coming up the remainder of this college golf season. And no doubt, so we're going to see you professionally someday. But in the meantime, just enjoy your time in college.
Well, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
Eugenio Chikara, I think you talked to the people in the college golf game, likely going to be the next great Spanish player in the sport. Now the women, international women rankings. And there you see at the bottom, there is Eugenio's sister, Carolina. outstanding player from Wake Forest, but Arizona State and Germany represented. There's Hannah Darling from South Carolina, Aileen Crowder from Stanford, Germany, and Ashley Lau playing in the Big Ten at Michigan is from Malaysia. Committee selections, Jinyu Liu from Oregon and Taiwan, Julia Lopez Ramirez playing at Mississippi State, and Scotland and Italy are represented. Amelia Williamson playing at Florida State is from England, and then Sweden getting the nod as an international coach's pick. And we see the name Hannah Darling, and she's now with us. She plays at the University of South Carolina. And Hannah, what's that mean to you to represent the international side, to play in this great team competition, the Arnold Palmer Cup? And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much. No, it's huge. I mean, this tournament over the last few years has definitely become such a great event for us college students to play. So I'm so excited, and to do it with, you know, some other international players that I play with quite a lot and know well is going to be amazing. And, you know, we saw Lorna McClement's name there. I played with her in a few teams growing up in Scotland quite a few years ago. So that's going to be fun to join forces and, yeah, play with the men, which is going to be interesting.
Hannah, you've won the St. Rule Trophy in St. Andrews, which is a huge event there. You've competed at Augusta National at the Women's Amateur. Even as an individual, does that kind of experience make it easier to deal with any kind of nerves that come from a team environment?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, you know, I've played these big individual amateur events before and had good success at them. But, you know, I've also played in Curtis Cups or won Curtis Cup last year and, you know, a Junior Solheim Cup. So, you know, these match play events, they're always the best week of the year. And yeah, getting to play some match play against different countries is great. So yeah, I mean, the success on the individual level obviously brings me confidence, but you know, I have the most amount of fun when I'm playing with part of a team, so it's going to be really good fun playing with them.
Hannah, friend texted me yesterday, going to Scotland later this summer, said, what courses should I play? I have a few ideas, but I bet you would have a better concept here.
Yeah.
Give me your best five courses that you would play in your beloved Scotland.
Wow, that's kind of tough. I mean, yeah, Scotland has a lot of great courses, but, you know, I would say definitely the Old Course has got to be at the top of the list. It's just incredible. And not just for the course, but, you know, for the history it has. So I would say St. Andrews, the Old Course. I'm a member at Gullin as well.
Love Gullin.
Yeah, so that has to be on my list. North Berwick is great. I have a few friends, members down there, which is good. King's Barnes has got to be there as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just all kind of the East Coast. And then obviously there's some great courses on the West Coast as well. But I really don't think you can go wrong at any course in Scotland. You know, they're all pretty spectacular.
Keeping with the Scottish theme here, Hannah, I noticed on your profile page on the Gamecocks website, you said your favourite Scottish food is haggis. That can't exactly be easy to find in Columbia, South Carolina.
No, definitely not. I have not had it since being here, which is kind of disappointing. I've been told that you can get canned haggis over here in America, but I've not ventured that far yet. I don't know if it'll ruin the experience for me.
Hannah, professional player you absolutely love to watch?
Wow. I always have been Rory McIlroy since growing up. And, you know, the Masters a few weeks ago, that was just incredible to watch. You know, I remember watching it when he had a chance to win a few years ago. And I think since then, everyone's always wanted him to win. But I almost grew up in the era of watching him play. So, you know, I just love watching him play. Yeah, Rory McIlroy is pretty cool.
So you just played the Augusta National Women's Amateur. You finished tied for 27th, made the cut, a respectable performance. And you mentioned the Old Course. So give me favorite hole at Augusta, favorite hole at the Old Course.
I would say 13 at Augusta National. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a bit of a longer hitter. So for me, you know, going and hitting 13 and 2 was a big thing for me. You know, when I dreamed of that course, that was always something I wanted to do. So I managed to do that and, you know, hit it pretty close and just looked out for eagle. And then the Old Course, I mean, you've got to say 18. You know, the golf hole itself is fairly simple, but, you know, just the walk up 18 and, mm-hmm. you know, you, the whole kind of scenery there just makes it so special. So, yeah, I would have to say 18 on the Old Course. Mm.
Well done. I'm in the Hannah Darling itinerary. I think she nailed it. I would add, I love Crail. Have you ever played Crail just outside of St. Andrews? Yeah.
Yeah, so one of my friends when I was growing up was a member at Crail, so I managed to play that quite a few times. The weather, although it was never that great, so that kind of ruined my memories a little bit. But yeah, a great course.
There is no bad weather in Scotland.
I'm guessing Hannah didn't hit irons off the 18th tee at the Old Course the way I had to the last time I was there, Rich.
No, they always say, with respect to the weather, Hannah, they don't have a tan over in Scotland. They have rust, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Hannah, congratulations on making the International Palmer Cup team. Congrats on all your success in amateur and college golf. You were a good sport, wonderful interview. We really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks, and thanks for having me.